Okay, so UMG pulled its catalog from TikTok. And I think that there's a lot of stuff to talk about. The first thing, maybe, is just like a simple amateur economic analysis of why and where it might lead. So the headline here, I think, for me is there's two choices that UMG and I think all labels are going to be faced with right now. One is getting out of music altogether and becoming a label for influencers where they buy people's audiences. It might be sometimes a musician, but more often than not, maybe 90% of the cases, they're just simple influencers, right? Because really, in some ways, that's already happened, where they're signing, because there's diminishing money in sales, meaning streaming or purchasing iTunes or buying records or vinyl, there's very expensive costs to touring, and audiences are increasingly online. And because sync music is not really money generated from the music industry anyway, it's essentially leeching off of the budgets of the film and TV industry, which is doing a lot better. And it's also being dominated by these music libraries that do kind of cheap knockoffs of existing sounds and bands. So you no longer need to pay $100K for a Mumford song. You can go for $25 a month, subscribe to a service that gives you endless knockoffs of Little Lion Man that you can just put in your car ad, right? And not saying it doesn't exist at all, but I think the horizon is getting closer where it really isn't a serious way, right? I think in publishing, it seems like getting pitching to artists is harder and harder because more and more artists can just kind of create their own songs with an in-house producer or with a team of people. And so I think that the revenue streams in music per se are rapidly disappearing. I mean, in the way that even streaming maybe 7 years ago, it was three times at the worst what it is now. So when you're making, when you have 1,000 streams, it make a difference. But when you're talking 50 million streams, the difference between, 50 million streams generating, what is it, 100, wow, 50 million streams generating, let me just do this calculation quickly. 400,000 dollars, and generating $150,000. That's a lot. That's a lot. And so, anyway, there may be a pull to just get out of music. Like, just say we're not really in the music business anymore. Yeah, we might sign a musician, but that's not where the money is. We're gonna pivot to essentially influencer signing, which again, I think has sort of already happened, where the main person at the label in charge of deciding if something's working is the brand partnership person who says, we were able to pull in Nike to give this influencer, 250K to be like a proud sponsor of their new shoe line. And, I think in a world where being a rock star was kind of fetishized, and a younger generation where influencer is fetishized, labels can no longer just be like, hey kid, give us all of your money that you're making from your influencer and we'll let you pretend to be a rock star. Because being a rock star, I just feel like it's less cool than it used to be, maybe. I don't know, maybe not. But anyway, the other possibility is that they're going to, and this might be more likely in the short term, what they realized is who is making money off of music? Well, it's the DSPs through subscriptions. But because there's a lot of competing DSPs, the subscriptions have to stay low enough so that there's not a lot of revenue happening right now, or profits, I would say, happening right now, right? Apple is probably losing money because they're just trying to undercut. They're pulling like a Walmart where they're trying to undercut the other DSPs, create a monopoly, and then they can do whatever they want. And Spotify is already hemorrhaging money, and they're, the only thing they can do is give more of their profits or revenue to artists, but they could give 100% of the revenue to artists, and it would only, now you're only making 0.006 cents a stream, which is worse than it was in 2015. So there's no, but if UMG or labels can own their own, who own their own catalogs, can create DSPs where you can go and stream like UMG music, then all of a sudden that subscription fee that you pay to UMG, not Spotify, is a way that UMG can monetize music again, because they actually don't have a way to monetize music anymore. And when they're having this conversation with TikTok and saying, you're not giving enough us enough money, even though we're providing you all this catalog, in some ways, there's just a blatant disregard for the well-being of all their signees because, you know, on some level they're operating like sociopathic monsters, but on another level they have a point because the truth is they're essentially letting their product, just like indie artists are, be monetized by a third party that didn't make the product. And if that third party is only willing to give them, you know, whatever 10% back, right? In some ways they're like, well, we could just have our own streaming service, right? I mean, how many people who aren't willing to pay more than $10 to access Spotify would be willing to pay $20, $30, $50 a month if it was the only way they could listen to Taylor Swift, you know? And in that way, they might 10x the income of labels. That would create a really interesting situation where essentially each distributor, right? And you could think of this as TuneCore, DistroKid, TikTok, whatever, would have their own DSP. And that would be really interesting. I don't know what would happen. But it would create a situation like streaming, you know, and it would mean that what might happen is that, you know, basically your audience, man, it's so interesting. Like, if you're an indie artist, you would be back in a place where you would need to be signed by a distributor, and the distributor that signed you, right, would essentially be the way that you got access to potential listeners. And it's a very strange thing to think about, but it would mean that all of a sudden the quality of roster that a label had would be really important. And labels would then have to say, holy shit, if we don't get Taylor Swift's catalog, like, we're going to lose half of our subscription base. So all of a sudden, someone like Taylor Swift, I mean, the amount of money that she could command. On the other hand, as an indie artist, it would mean, on the one hand, you would be excluded from large chunks of potential audiences. But on the other hand, it might be the kind of thing where there would be sort of like these, either this super fragmented landscape where each indie artist wouldn't even have a distributor. They just have their music on like a website and you'd go and listen to the music on their website. And it would just, everyone would cultivate their own audiences like an email list, right? And man, it's fucking insane. But basically, it would mean that it would be about developing these sort of really personalized fan bases, like you're a blogger or something, and owning the means of your own distribution. Or there would be a sort of equivalent of like a TuneCore or a DistroKid or whatever that would essentially take on unsigned artists. And you'd have like a subscription to be able to listen to all your favorite indie bands on TuneCore or onto whatever. And yeah, it's really interesting. I don't know what the deal is with that stuff, but it's gonna be fucking weird. I think it's gonna get really fucking weird. And I think that what's gonna happen is indie artists like on UMG are going to lose access to a lot of fans maybe who wouldn't like pay for a UMG subscription, you know, because they're subscribed to EMI or they're subscribed to some thing. And then there might be when you're an indie artist, you exist on the more inclusive stream, like DSP, meaning like that, say, TuneCore becomes sort of like the go-to place for indie artists to go. Or maybe it's DistroKid, TuneCore, AWOL, Orchard. They all team up and they say, we're not going to do our own distribution. We're going to do like a bundled thing. So like, if you want to listen to a non-UMG artist, you're going to sign up for Indie DSP. And that's going to be $20 a month. And we're going to pay our indie artists like a lot more. And we're going to do our own internal playlisting service that is not payola'd by labels. I mean, I'm just sort of like, these are like utopian and dystopian. So the dystopian thing is, if you're an indie artist, you have no access to DSPs anymore. You're totally locked out. You quit music and you have to basically know someone and get signed to even have a chance. Like, this is back in the 90s. Like, if you weren't signed to a major label deal, your CD didn't get in stores and you just were nobody and you just play shows, and making a record is pointless. That's like dystopian. Utopian is that indie artists actually, because there's many more of them, actually end up, and people, even though they may just de facto unconsciously biased towards large artists, consciously may in fact, like me, I'd sort of be more interested in signing up for the DSP that gives me access to every single unsigned band, which is like 100,000 times bigger than just the signed artists. And then if I want to go listen to Taylor Swift or Drake, I can go on YouTube, right? Because I think there'll always be these kind of like third party things that just like host music. And you'll have these sort of like Napster-like situations where you can, if you want to go here, you know, Shake It Off, you can go here, Shake It Off, you know, even if you don't access to UMG DSP. Or people will just do 10 subscriptions. But I think in a utopian way, it creates a separate market for independent artists that's outside of the label system, that has its own rules, and that is probably governed in a more populist, democratic, egalitarian way, because most of the indie stuff tends to be a little bit more of a human endeavor, because people who are just in it for the fucking big checks tend to gravitate towards the major stuff. But people who are in it for the kind of cool, you know, utopian post-apocalyptic like community building vibe are generally in it to create cool new ways of thinking about how to, you know, foster new lines of creative engendering of cool stuff that's compensated in a way that makes sense anyway. I think that there's just like so many possibilities here. But I think it may be just the idea that Spotify and Apple are, this is the other parody here. It's like Spotify and Apple think of themselves as the, you know, as the natural born inheritors of all of music. They think one of them is going to be left, but it may be that they're left as the king of a pile of skulls. Like, meaning by the time Apple basically undercuts Spotify enough by paying more streams, you know, per stream, and winning some PR battle, some Pyrrhic victory, to like be the one left standing, or by the time Spotify figures its shit out and, you know, makes people realize Apple is just playing some investor game of market share and has no interest in supporting indie music. They're just wheeling and dealing with the majors as hard as they possibly can, and creating huge barriers to entry with like Atmos, and which is essentially a paywall for indie artists to be, you know, considered for editorial stuff. Anyway, as soon as people, like one of them won the battle, it may be a battle where there's actually nothing there left to fight over, because all of the artists have been basically sucked into these micro distributors that are owned by the labels. Because, like I said, the irony here is the only people who have vertical integration really are indie artists. They make it, they write it, they distribute it themselves, they own 100% of it, they determine everything about it, right? They have access to their fans directly, there's no one telling. So labels in some ways are jealous of indie artists and they want their own control, but they don't actually have vertical integration because the streaming has been separated out. Now, the danger and another dystopian possibility is like, if labels have their own DSPs, it's a total, in some ways it's like a partial monopoly, right? Because there's so few labels, you'll end up with something very similar to like Spotify and Apple, except rather than sort of trying to differentiate themselves by being cheaper or by being better, they'll purely just be like, this year we have Drake's new record. So if you want to hear Drake, you have to give us all your money. And if you don't give us all your money, then fuck you. You know, and the problem is what that will do is it will definitely increase money and revenue generated for labels, but it won't necessarily generate more money for artists, because they'll just sign shittier deals if there's more of a bigger pot to maintain the status quo. And it won't have anything to do with giving indie artists a monopoly. But on the other hand, if indie artists sort of, the problem is if say like TuneCore, DistroKid, and, you know, AWOL get in like a three-way fight about catalog, and they're like, TuneCore's like, we have our own distributor, and AWOL's like, we have our own distributor, and it's like, if you want to hear fucking this, your friend's indie band, you got to do this, then it's going to just kill it. because no one wants to subscribe to five fucking DSPs that don't have Taylor Swift on them. So I think the better thing would be if all of the indie distributors get together and say, we don't necessarily need vertical integration, or we're going to have a true monopoly where we basically collect all the people who don't have, you know, access to one of the three major DSPs, right? Then we could have a situation where, say that it's, especially if you could create something cool, like a, almost like a, you know, a worker-owned sort of DSP, where all the artists who distribute through the indie distributors get some kind of ownership of the DSP and get to vote, right? For example, like at Vanguard, right? They're essentially a investor-owned company, so investors get to vote on decisions. Like, we got to vote about subscription prices and about how that works and about playlisting and editorial stuff. Like, you could create a sort of a proletariat monopoly on indie music, and, you know, that could be really great. That could be really great because there's so much productivity and talent in indie music. I mean, one of the things I've learned at sort of like working with a lot of the sort of like lower tier record signees and the totally undiscovered indie artists is the amount of talent as writers, as musicians, as creative people, as people who have cool perspectives in, like, you know, the 18 to 28 year old or 18 to 40 year old, whatever, you know, demographic of independent artists. There's no less talent. And in fact, there's usually a lot more talent, because one of the things that I've learned that's sad is that labels don't like to sign people who are truly independently self-sufficient, because they can't control them. And it seems like a conspiratorial thing and a kind of like childish, you know, neo-leftist, just like knee-jerk, assuming everyone's out to get you thing. And I don't believe that. And I don't think that people shouldn't sign to major labels. You know, especially in the current moment, there's still access to power and audiences there that, like, as an artist, selfishly will benefit you. But I do know that the idea that there's an artist who's a fucking great musician who can create their own masters that sound great and then have an audience and that, you know, has the respect of peers and the respect of, like, really cool established musicians, that's a fucking threat. Labels don't want to sign that shit, right? Why would they want to sign that shit? What do they have to offer? You know, I mean, I've had similar experiences, but I've also talked to people who've literally been told by A&Rs, like, dude, you did everything right. You got a fucking social media audience that seems engaged and you're authentic. Your music is fucking great. You're starting to tour on your own. What do you want from us? And the fucking answer is, what do you mean? What do I want? Fucking money, you fucking idiot. Like, what else would you want from a record label? You're literally called a label. Right? Like, you're literally a thing you stick on. Like, you stopped doing artist development like 20 years ago. So we don't want you for that. So we developed ourselves. Right? And now you have the fucking gall to be like, you did everything yourself perfectly. So we can't do anything for you. It's like, yes, you can. You have a monopoly on money. Give good artists money. That's your fucking job. Right? So my point is, like, I think, and of course, that's the one thing labels don't want to do. You know, at best what they'll say is, we'll give you a big marketing budget, but you don't get to choose how to spend it. We're going to choose how to spend it. And it's like, fuck you, right? You're going to spend $50,000, half of our marketing budget, on some fucking, like, live acoustic music video that I could have done with my friend better for $350. And you're going to do it to basically give yourself a quick out to dropping this artist, right? As soon as it turns out that they don't actually have a trust fund or whatever that you can leech off of. So, anyway, rant aside, like, I think that we've truly crossed this line into, like, you either pursue the major label thing as a non-musician, as a pure influencer, where you understand your only value to the label is access to a large audience to sell commodities to, or you say, you got to build a future where talent is rewarded, where merit is rewarded. I mean, there's a lot of, like, talk about how meritocracy is problematic because a lot of what we think of as merit is actually privilege. Okay. So I think, but that aside, it's a lot better than just simply signing privilege, right? Because at least if privilege generates merit, there's room for the exception. If labels are just signing people in Orange County who live in influencer houses and have access to large amounts of gullible audiences, you know, who don't have taste, that's worse. So a step towards a meritocracy, at least pretending like it's a meritocracy is a lot better than not even pretending it's a meritocracy, than actively telling people, if you have too much talent, you're useless to us and we can't do anything for you, right? And I think like what it really means is, if we can't control you, then you're useless to us, because we're not in the business of creating beautiful music that generates demand. We're in the business of buying prefabricated, gullible audiences. I mean, one of the things too you see is when people have sophisticated audiences who don't like being sold bullshit by bullshitters, that's an unappealing thing as well. So, you know, I think labels have really dug themselves into a hole, and I'm always, my only conspiracy in this life is that the consolidation of where you have these sort of the actual, quote, label, like an island that's under UMG, right? It doesn't stop there. That's my conspiracy, that even UMG is owned by these larger umbrella companies, or at least is tangentially part of a wider network of sort of businesses that are in different fields, that are in energy, that are in, you know, real estate, that are in the same way that Trinity Church in downtown New York, where I did AV when I was struggling real hard, you know, is a church, but it's actually a subsidiary and a tax writer for the largest real estate company in New York, Trinity Real Estate. And so whether the church makes money or not doesn't matter. I wonder sometimes if it doesn't matter truly if Island Records makes any money. And then that's what explains the just absolute failure of aesthetic leadership, creativity, just not fucking caring about the long-term health of the music industry, because it's a hedge, meaning in the way that ByteDance runs TikTok, but also a million other things, you can think of TikTok as essentially some sort of a hedge by investing in, you know, global entertainment. Even if global entertainment isn't as lucrative as like tech or energy, it is a sector, and it's a little bit decorrelated from some of those main massive, you know, profit sectors, right? And so if something were to happen to, you know, the main sectors, if there was a big downturn, there's a chance that you'd have some kind of decorrelation by owning a big stake in global entertainment. So, and I'm not saying entertainment isn't an industry in and of itself and it's not profit. It's not really a conspiracy, and it's not like an Illuminati cabal conspiracy at all. That shit's fucked up. But I'm just saying, like, I think that there's a lot of question about, we assume that labels are these like rational actors where they're trying to make really smart business decisions. But in a similar way, at the very least, what's happening is A&Rs, because they're not owners in the label, they're just owners in their own careers, they really are more interested in not getting fired than in like signing the next David Bowie. And there's some great A&Rs out there who are like idealists, and I've met them, and they're lovely people, and what, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that by and large, like when you look at just like incentive structures rather than like people's personal, you know, morality or idealism or whatever, when you look at, there's no incentive structure in labels at the lower, mid, and even top levels to like be great or to sign great artists, especially because the DSPs, like I said, like have everyone equally. So by owning a lot of great artists doesn't like give you some kind of, let me say, massive edge structurally. Sure, like if Taylor Swift sells a lot of records, like you make more money, but it's not like you can say, we have these great artists, so you need to like our company, UMG. And this is where, circling back, the idea of labels becoming DSPs is very compelling to me, because what it says is your catalog of artists, your roster, isn't just an asset on a one-off by one-off thing. It's an asset in terms of, meaning like, it's not just like, well, we have Taylor Swift's catalog, so she makes a lot of money, that's great. It says, we have Taylor Swift's catalog, and we can leverage that into forcing you to subscribe to our DSP, which will give you access to all of our artists. And so the stronger your roster as a label, the more incentive people have to have allegiance to your label, not just to the artists on your label, right? And the thing what people are fighting over now isn't who gets to listen to Taylor Swift, it's which DSP is going to get you to pay a subscription fee, because they have access to all these artists, and the rate's the lowest and their algorithm's the best. So loyalty is being determined not at the artist level, but at the DSP level. And UMG is missing out because no one's got fucking loyalty to UMG as a consumer. They don't even know what UMG is. UMG needs to create a situation from their perspective where their catalog actually benefits them, not just the DSPs and the artist. And the artist manager and the A&R and maybe in some indirect way the CEO and the bottom line, but the brand, right? One of the things that's happening is that labels increasingly and forever have been seen as basically just these like shitty losers who have way too much money and more money than sense and have just fucked over artists, you know? And I think that in some ways that's an exaggeration. Like I think that, you know, the truth is complicated and it's all gray, but I think the truth is that we live in a world of brands. And if you look at big corporations, right, McDonald's doesn't want you to, they don't care if you like their hamburger. They want you to like McDonald's. If everyone all of a sudden decided that hamburgers suck, I mean, and they've done this, they'll do Impossible Burgers. They'll say, McDonald's doesn't do hamburgers anymore. You don't want hamburgers? Fuck them, you know? But because they don't care about you liking the fucking hamburger. They want you to like McDonald's. They want you to buy whatever they sell you because it's McDonald's. Just like UMG is in a situation where it's like UMG is only good, and it might not even be good, if you like an artist on UMG. Like, as soon as the artist that you like leaves UMG, you just, you know. But if UMG has a reputation, and I think Columbia did this for a while, of signing cool, interesting artists, then you might have an allegiance to that label. This is what the good indie labels do. And this is what like the Phoebe Bridgers label does. You don't, you know, when people talk about, Dead Oceans, like as a label, they're oftentimes thinking of Dead Oceans as like this cool brand where it's like, I don't know of the band, but Dead Oceans sound, then they're probably cool. Or the 1975's label, or whatever, you know, it's like you go to these places because there's a curation of cool music. And I think that it's so much about that. It's about the brand of the label. It's about the brand of the label. It's not about the brand of the artist from the label's perspective. So anyway, I think that this fight is like a way deeper thing that's being untangled. And I think, you know, the taking down of UMG artists from TikTok, it's like, dude, I think it's going to get really fucking weird. I think it's going to get really, really weird. But maybe interesting, and it might just free us. I think we're all so trapped by these, like, numbers and hype and these sort of, like, algorithmic flows that we have to enter into in order to even be considered, like, real. And I think if that all breaks down as a conceptual structure in our minds for determining success, and if we think more concretely, like, literally everyone else, which is, like, does the work you do provide you a stable income so you can have a safe life and do the stuff and continue to make the art you want to make? Like, if those are the criteria, then it may create a whole new world of the possibility to, like, to actually just, like, align our values with our art, which I think is the whole point, right? Like, the final thing I'll say is I've been thinking a lot about the fact that the only thing that will make you feel good is when you look at how the way that you live lines up with your deepest values. If the way that you're living lines up with your deepest values, you're going to wake up in the morning feeling pretty good. If it doesn't, you're going to feel bad. But what happens is we don't live aligned to our values because society really pressures us to go in certain directions that are not in line with anyone's values. But we do it because in our unconscious, we have supplanted our values with our material gains and our social acceptance. And, you know, and validation, external validation, right? Rather than realizing that we are our own judge, jury, and executioner, we outsource that to everybody else. So we pursue things that will aggrandize us in other people's eyes, that will validate us externally, but in doing so, we betray our true principles. And we feel shitty. That just makes us more desperately chase the things externally that we think are going to make us feel better, but it never does. It's like sugar. When you're hungry and you eat sugar, it kind of makes you more hungry, but it's actually because the sugar isn't satisfying your hunger. If you eat a fucking chicken salad or whatever, you won't be hungry anymore. You'll wake up feeling full and good, unless the mayonnaise is spoiled like it was once for me, and then you throw up in the middle of your tech AV job in the Trinity Church. But that's a story for another day. Anyway, so that's my last thought. Peace.